Dr. Dean Ornish is best known for research that he says shows that heart disease can be prevented or reversed by switching to a non-fat diet and making appropriate changes in your lifestyle. His latest book, Love and Survival, explores the connection between emotional health and susceptibility to heart disease. For example, loneliness and isolation can increase the likelihood of smoking, drinking, overeating, and other self-destructive behavior. And according to Ornish, loneliness and isolation increase the likelihood of disease and premature death from all causes by 200 to 500% through mechanisms which are not fully understood. Dr. Ornish's new book presents some of the research into emotional health and heart disease. Let's look at some of the studies that you refer to in your book, Love and Survival. Maybe you could tell us about the Harvard Mastery of Stress study.
That was a particularly interesting study because they asked Harvard undergraduates in the 1950s two simple questions. Were you close to your mother, and were you close to your father when you were growing up? 40 years later, that's what's so amazing to me about so many of these studies. 40 years later, those who said, no, I wasn't close to my mother, and no, I wasn't close to my father, all of them, 100% of them, had major illnesses in midlife. But less than half of them who said, yes, I was close to both parents, and somewhere in between if they were close to one or the other parent. Now, why should, you know, something be so predictive 40 years later? And I think that our first teachers of love and intimacy are our parents. And if you grew up in a family where they didn't know how to do that very well, and or on an extreme, if they were abusive, either sexually or physically or emotionally abusive, you quickly learn that intimacy is dangerous, that it's not safe to open up to someone else. And since these aren't skills we really learn much about in our culture, we tend to relate to people as adults much as we did when we were younger. So if we didn't get it when we were younger, we're probably not going to get it when we're older. And so to whatever degree that lack of intimacy is predictive of premature death or disease, it's not surprising that those early life experiences are so predictive.
Tell us about another of the studies you find particularly interesting about the connection between your emotional life and emotional connections and your health.
I think one of the most interesting is a study that was done at the University of Texas Medical School of men and women who were about to undergo open heart surgery. And they also asked them two questions, but they were different questions. They said, do you draw strength from your religious faith? Whatever that faith might be, didn't matter. And are you a member of a group of people that meet together regularly? It could be a church or synagogue or a civic group. It could even be a bowling league or a bridge club. 6 months after open heart surgery, those who said no to both questions, no, I'm not a member of a group that meets regularly, no, I don't draw strength from my religious faith, 21% of them were dead compared to only 3% who said yes to both questions, and about a fourfold difference in those who said yes to one or the other. That's a sevenfold difference in mortality. We're not talking about touchy-feely kind of stuff here. We're talking death, and not just a little, but a lot. So to me, it illustrates a couple of things. The first is, first of all, I don't know any surgeons that ask these two questions to their patients, but you can be sure if a drug came out or a new surgical technique that had a sevenfold difference in mortality 6 months after surgery, you know, every doctor in the country would be doing it. The second is, you know, you're dealing with something very basic and very fundamental when the relatively crude measures of intimacy are so predictive. I mean, let's face it, you know, being a member of a bowling league is not the most intimate of life experiences. And yet, even that kind of measure can be so predictive of survival. And it's really caused me to rethink a lot of my ideas over time as I've done this research on reversing heart disease, that the need for love and intimacy is a basic human need that's as fundamental as eating and sleeping and breathing. And when we don't get that, we pay a price. And the price isn't just in the quality of our lives, it's in the quantity of our lives and how long we live and how likely we are to get sick. And if we understand that, you know, to me, awareness is the first step in healing. And if we become aware, more aware of how much these things matter, then we can make different choices and not see them as a luxury, but as something that's very basic and necessary to not only our happiness and our well-being, but even our survival.
Dean Ornish, you're best known for your work with diet, trying to use diet to reverse heart disease. How did you stumble onto the idea that somebody's emotional life is connected to the health of their heart?
Most people tend to think of my work as mainly about diet. I mean, it's gotten to the point where I can't go out to dinner without someone either apologizing for what they're eating or commenting on what I'm eating. But Even when I did my first study back in 1977, 22 years ago, I had groups. I had 10 men and women, all of whom had severe heart disease. This was my first pilot study when I was a medical student. And I put them in a hotel for a month, and I put them on this program of mine, which included the diet and exercise and meditation and yoga. And we met in a support group once an evening that was originally designed to help people stay on the diet and to quit smoking and to follow the exercise and so on. But what became clear to me even back then was that we took this very diverse group of men and women, put them together in a group, and unwittingly, I had created a community. And then people began to open up to each other and to talk about what was really going on in their lives. And even though these people were so different from each other in the ways that we usually categorize people in terms of, you know, age and race and gender and sexual preference and socioeconomics and all demographics and so on, they all began to talk about, almost all of them, how lonely and isolated and what was really happening in their lives. And it became clear to me over time that this wasn't just something that was helping them stay on the other parts of the program. It was one of the most important parts of the program, and certainly one of the most meaningful, both for the patients and for me. And then later, as more research became clear that this intervention was probably as important as the diet and so on, not just in terms of helping them stay on it, but it had direct benefits above and beyond that, that I became more and more interested in that.
My guest is Dean Ornish, and he's well known for his research into reversing heart disease through changes in the diet, through a non-fat diet. His new book is called Love and Survival, 8 Pathways to Intimacy and Health. Let's talk a little bit about diet. Have you had any changes of heart, so to speak, about the fat-free diet that you've suggested is good for the prevention or even the reversal of heart disease?
No, actually, I think that there's more evidence than ever that shows that this is really the most optimal diet for most people. When you eat a low-fat, plant-based diet, you're avoiding those substances that cause disease, like animal fat, animal protein, saturated fat, cholesterol, and so on, oxidants like iron. And you're also getting literally thousands of substances that are actually protective: phytochemicals, bioflavonoids, antioxidants, carotenoids, retinols, isoflavones, a whole alphabet soup of substances that have been shown to have anti-heart disease, anti-cancer, even anti-aging properties. And with few exceptions, these are found in a plant-based diet. The only differences that I've made in my program over the years are a few. The first is, I've always said it's better to avoid simple carbohydrates like sugar and white flour and alcohol, which your body converts to sugar, because they get absorbed quickly. They make your body blood sugar go up. Your pancreas makes insulin to bring it back down, and the insulin can accelerate the conversion of those calories into fat. So a lot of books have been coming out saying, oh, all carbohydrates are bad. You should eat really healthy foods that won't stimulate an insulin response, like, you know, sausage and bacon and pork, because those won't do that. Well, that's just nutty. I mean, it's a great way to sell books telling people that those are health foods, but they're not. The distinction to make is between simple and complex carbohydrates. Complex carbohydrates, fruits and vegetables and grains and beans in their natural forms, are high in fiber, which slows the absorption, so you don't get a rapid spike in blood sugar, you don't provoke an insulin response, and you're also not getting all the saturated fat and all the other stuff that's in meat. So when you, for example, refine away the fiber and the bran that's in whole wheat flour or brown rice and turn it into white flour or white rice, you're changing a complex carbohydrate into a simple one. The other thing that I think is worth noting is that some supplements I think are good, and they include some of the antioxidant vitamins, I think folic acid and folate, which can reduce homocysteine levels, but also I think 2 or 3 grams a day of fish oil or flaxseed oil can provide the omega-3 fatty acids that can reduce sudden cardiac death by 50 to 70% or more, but don't give you the excessive fat and cholesterol that you find in fish or the kinds of things that you find in the Mediterranean diet. So with those refinements of my program, it's pretty much the way that it's been for the last 22 years.
Speaking of the Mediterranean diet, I don't know if you saw, there was a recent article in the New York Times by health writer Jane Brody about the Mediterranean diet. And this is a diet that consists largely of fruits, vegetables, cereals, grains, fish and beans, and a fair amount of olive oil. She wrote, the most surprising and gastronomically pleasing feature of the dietary scheme that has emerged from research is that diet may not have to be low in fat to protect the heart, rather than insisting, as Dr. Dean Ornish, that no fat be added to food and that all fat-containing animal foods be avoided. Advocates of the Mediterranean diet include a fair amount of fat, nearly all in the form of oils, olive oil, nut and seed oils, and fish oil. Dean Ornish, what do you think?
Well, I do think that the fruits and vegetables and grains and beans in the Mediterranean diet are protective. But, you know, what's really protective about the oils in the Mediterranean diet is not the olive oil. I mean, the olive oil, people would like you to think that olive oil is good for you. It really isn't. It's not as bad for you as, say, coconut oil or Crisco. But olive oil has virtually none of the omega-3 fatty acids that are protective, and it's higher in the omega-6 that are harmful. It's the small amounts of the omega-3s that are so protective. You only need about 3 to 4 grams a day of flaxseed or fish oil. And you can take those in little capsules that come in 1 grams. You don't need the excessive amounts that cause problems. Even canola oil at least has some of the omega-3s. Olive oil has none. So it's despite the olive oil, not because of it. Now, if you're eating olive oil instead of lard or butter, you're going to have a lower risk of heart disease, and that's good. But if you actually look at the Mediterranean countries, they have lower risks of heart disease, breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon cancer, than countries like the U.S., but not nearly as low as Asian countries like Japan and China. And so to me, a Mediterranean diet is a better diet, but it's not an optimal diet. An optimal diet would be more like you find in countries where the heart disease and cancer rates are even lower, like in Asia. My colleagues and I are doing a study now to see whether the progression of prostate cancer may be affected through a similar kind of intervention. And I think we're at a state with respect to prostate and breast cancer and perhaps colon cancer, very similar to where we were with heart disease 22 years ago.
You said that, you know, research has found that people in Mediterranean countries and in the East seem to have a lower rate of heart disease than in the United States. And that's in the research largely been attributed to diet. Do you think that a sense of community and connection might come into play in those cultures as well?
I do, actually. I think that so much has been made of people drinking red wine in France, for example, and maybe that's the cause of them having such lower rates of heart disease. Well, first of all, heart disease is still the number one cause of death in France. It's not like they don't have heart disease. But I wonder, why is it that studies show that people who drink one or two drinks a day live longer than those who don't drink at all or who drink more than that? Well, where else in our culture in the U.S. do people get together, they get a little high, they let their emotional defenses down, they talk about what's going on in their lives? I mean, what do we call that? We call that happy hour. And it may be that the benefits of those who drink moderately are more due to those social factors than to the red wine or to the alcohol per se. And similarly, it may be that in other countries where they have lower rates of heart disease, at least part of the reason may not only be due to diet, but also to these social factors. On the other hand, a great experiment is now occurring around the world, and that is many of these countries that have had among the lowest rates of heart disease in the world are beginning to live like Americans, and they're beginning to die like Americans. They're importing our way of eating, and they're importing our way of dying. In Japan, for example, Japanese boys now have cholesterol levels that are as high as American boys. In one generation, we're probably going to see them going from one of the lowest to one of the highest rates of heart disease in the world. And it's sad because it's so avoidable.
Dr. Dean Ornish, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
It's my great pleasure.
Dr. Dean Ornish is the founder of the Preventive Medicine Research Institute in Sausalito, California, and a professor of medicine at the University of California School of Medicine in San Francisco. His latest book is called Love and Survival. And that concludes our look at research into the prevention of heart disease. This is Fresh Air.